Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Pamela Brewer welcoming you to this edition of Men's Monday here on Mind Talk. This is the day when you and I have the opportunity to meet another man and sort of look at his life and learn about him and the challenges and the successes that he has faced. Today, I have a particular treat for you, I would say. Many of you may recall Tyler Perry's The Browns. And if you do, you will remember Reggie, the on and off again love interest of Cora Jean. Reggie was also the school's football coach, and sorry to say, Reggie lived with his mom. Maurice G. Smith, welcome to Mind Talk.
Oh, thank you for having me. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be talking to you on this Men's Monday.
Well,
about things concerning my... go ahead. Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you this. In the Browns, did you ever have the opportunity to move out of your mom's house, or were you just living with mom throughout?
No, actually, the character did go to California for a while. He was still living with his mom, but he did go to California for a while to pursue a coaching career and go to, like, a coaching camp. So he did do that. But then when he came back, yes, he did move back home to his father.
Does that bear any resemblance to your life?
When I first got back from London, where I studied and got my master's, I did move back in. I was home for a while, around 27, 28-ish, around there. I was back home for 3 years. But, you know, that was partially because... my dad, he was dealing with complications with diabetes, and I had been away for a while, so it was good to be home with him. He kind of wanted me to be there to, just for the security of being a new actor. And, you know, I was able to still go up and down the highway to New York and down to Delaware, Maryland, and do auditions, and of course in the Pennsylvania, Jersey area.
So being at home for Maurice, the person, sounds like it was an affirming thing for you as well as for your family.
Yes, it was. Absolutely, absolutely. And I have really a couple thoughts about that. You know, like, I do believe that, yes, when you become an adult, you should try to get on your own. But I think you find, and with some people, they do stay at home. Like, I do know people that are just doing well, and they just happen to still live with their parents. And I'm not sure if that's necessarily a bad thing or a good thing. I think it just depends on the person. I think if the person isn't, you know, developing, they need to go. You know what I mean? They need to go see the world, go to try to be on their own and stuff. But I think if you're healthy and you know, have a good job and stuff like that, it's good to be, you know, home until you're totally ready to leave and go out on your own.
Especially
as an artist.
Well, I was going to say that's an interesting perspective. And as an artist, particularly given the ebbs and flows of your business, that could make a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. Let's back up a little bit. Tell us where you were born and the family you were born into. Describe who was living with you when you first landed on the planet.
Oh, I was born in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
To Mary and Gilbert Smith. Both, and my sister was there. So I grew up in a two-family home with a sister, and my dad worked really, really hard to make sure we weren't rich, you know, but I never wanted for anything. And that's one thing I'm really appreciative that he did. And he kind of sacrificed his dream because he kind of wanted to be he wanted to own a business and do auto mechanic stuff, but he sacrificed his dream for his family and worked at a company called the Buds Company, which was one of the better paying jobs at the in Philadelphia, working at the Bud Company. And my mom, she took off work while I was a kid, and went back to work when I went to college. I went to Westchester University. And that's when she went back to working in the department store.
So
she was, worked in retail.
You and your mm-hmm. sister had a parent at home every day.
For the most part, yes.
So mm-hmm. no latchkey experience for you and your sister?
No, not at all. Not at all. Like I said, not until 18 when she went back to work. That's when it, you know. But for the most part, you know, my mom was there. She was there if I needed to get picked up from school because I didn't feel well. She was there. If I was home, you know, she was there. And that's something she wanted to do.
You know, it's interesting because there are so many children who do not have the gift of having a parent who's able to be at home for them on a regular basis. So good for her, and actually good for the household. What were the early yeah. dreams that you found out from your parents that they had for you? What were their early dreams for you?
My dad, well, they kind of just went with whatever I went with. They were, like, when I had my football dreams, they were down with the football. I started off doing music at a young age, and I think my dad, he really loved that as well. Because he said, I can always see you as a conductor or as, you know, doing music. Because we were really into music when we were younger. Like, we had our own little jazz band, everything, outside of school. And they were just really supportive of everything I did, you know. Or and I didn't come up with much, and but the things I did come up with, like the football and the music, they were supportive. You know, I went to a music magnet junior high school, which was Shawmont, and then I went to a college prep, one of the oldest schools, you know, very well known, Central High School for high school. And yeah, it was like whatever I did, even from early on, Cub Scout, Boy Scout, you know, we were, you know, they were supportive of everything. Now, they said that they always kind of saw the acting thing because I was hamming up a little bit in photos. And, you know, when I would get in trouble, my mom would say, you always got to look at yourself when you're crying. You know, I would look in the mirror to see what it looked like. So once I finally did get the, you know, and I was always in the film and television, you know, and it's like I had a cousin, Sandy, and she would have books of the movies, and I always got into like the books after I saw the movie. And I always tease her and say, "You got me into this," because you know I was just, you know, so into it. I would escape. You know, and I knew that's what I felt like even football and, you know, music did for people and art, you know what I mean? It's like, I know that feeling of coming home and just escaping and seeing when people watch, like even for me, the football games were like, I knew it was people's escape, you know. I mean, watching football was an escape. So, and I think you need that. I think after a hard day, be it school or whatever, you know, you need that, whatever it is that you know helps you get through the day, or you know, shake off the day. So
a lot of times shake off the day in these times.
Right, it's difficult.
You know, the experience for you of having a mom and a dad who were so supportive of everything that you did would really have added to your positive sense of self. Would you agree mm-hmm. with that?
Absolutely. I mean, my mom is still my, you know, biggest cheerleader. Unfortunately, my dad passed away when I first moved out here, and he didn't get a chance to see me on TV, but he saw plays in college. Like, I was in the first black plays at Westchester University. We did Fences, August Wilson, and like, he was so blown away by it. He loved it when I was in school. So like I said, I it felt good to make him proud. I always felt like he, you know, somehow, because he didn't get a chance to do the college thing and all that, he was able to live through me and my sister.
You know, one of the things that's interesting about just your story is that you yourself are an African-American man, and you chose a career that is, putting it mildly, fairly competitive. Did your folks have any concerns about the impact of race and or racism on your ability to thrive in your chosen profession?
Well, the competitiveness, I think that goes back to when I first got back home, wanting me to be there, have some security, and not just, you know, go move up to New York immediately. So, yes, there was always a concern of a financial concern. And, you know, that still even goes on to this day, because it is still very competitive, and the ups and downs. And, you know, it can be very, 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 very difficult. And it can be very, very, you know, mentally draining to deal with at times. So, yes, I think they were worried about that. But, again, being supportive, they, you know, she still says it's, you know, it's, you got to pursue your dream. You know, you're blessed with being, having a gift, and, you know, she knows why I want to do it, and she just really wants to see me successful, you know, continue to be successful. Because, I mean, whenever she sees my work, be it a commercial or something, a play or a TV show or a small part in the movie, I mean, she's just so proud. You know what I mean? It makes me feel good, you know. And also that affects my family. You know, I have family members now. It's like to be an African-American male and be in a circle of friends and be in the community and have people be able to, wow, you're not like that. You know what I mean? They could see me, touch me, feel me, talk to me, you know, and it's inspiring. It's inspiring. It makes them think they can do it, which I think is a great thing.
Well, it's certainly a very empowering thing. Tell us a little bit about your family today.
My family, my mother, right now it's my mother and my sister, and I have a godson and my nephew. And that, talking about moving back in, my sister actually did move back in with my mother to help out as she's getting older. So she's back at home, but she has her own businesses. And like I said, it's, they help each other. And she has, you know, my nephew there. And of course, I still have aunts, uncles, cousins. I actually have a cousin that is younger, so she's so young, she's always calling me uncle. It's like one of those things. So she, you know, I think of her like my niece, and she's actually staying with me out here, and she has the dream of being a studio executive. She was just working at ABC doing an internship, just graduated from Drexel last week. So
good for her.
Yeah, it's great. It's great, and I'm happy for it. And it's so exciting to see. I remember when I came out here with one of my fraternity brothers, and I remember us being the new guy. You know, and we were so like, you know, I thought every single day I'll be at an audition. I was working all the time. It's crazy. And to see her so excited about just being in Los Angeles, you know. I can remember first getting out here and going to the beach and, you know, on Christmas. And I'm like, I'm in shorts. This is crazy. But so that's what my family's like now. I have my niece staying with me. And we're working it out to try to make sure I continue to pursue my dreams and she pursues her dreams.
You know, it's interesting that you referenced her internship. I would suggest that internships are so valuable in any profession, but certainly in the area that she's wanting to move into.
Absolutely. Because while she was there, I think ABC got the first black female executive president, I think, is running ABC, and she got to be there for that. And that was, you know, that was great for her. That was great for her. At a meeting she took, and, you know, she went out for a job interview for Oprah. They loved her. It's just, you know, it's great. It really is great. And I do suggest, like, some sort of school. I'm a school guy. I'm not saying you have to go to school to necessarily be an actor. You don't have to do that, but you do have to do some training, and that training is valuable. And I was able to do, and well, I guess you would call it internships, but it was like a fellowship at theaters in Philadelphia as I was developing. So that was good. I worked at Freedom Theater. I worked at Walnut Street Theater, and that training and being a coach and, you know, I mean, being a teacher or you know, going to Ben Franklin to teach an acting class for the kids down there, it was that helped me and shaped me as an actor and artist.
So it sounds like what
you... And also give back.
Well, yeah, and it sounds like you have had a number of different experiences, but they all go to support your dream and your goal, which is continue to refine and grow your own acting.
That's what I want to do. I mean, and, you know, I also want, hopefully, you know, as it goes down the line, like, I love the model of the Freedom Theater and what it does for the community, and how you got kids that go there that may never, ever, ever do it professionally, but taking dance class helps kids with football, helps males, you know, and anybody with athletics. I mean, doing the acting thing, it breaks people out of their shell, and, you know, they sometimes do better in their public speaking and stuff like that. So these people may never ever hit the stage, but going and having that in the community is something that, as I do get further along, I definitely want to do to give back, is that type of philanthropic type of endeavor where I can help help not only just kids, because it's kids and adults, but help, you know, have a theater and be able to do that and also still produce live work, you know.
You know, it's interesting.
In a community, you know, background.
It's interesting to hear you talk about the value of the Freedom Theater for those students, whether or not they wound up on the stage. I think that many times, many parents will think about what kind of work he or she is going to do, and then promote activities that promote that job, versus seeing, for example, mm-hmm. something like acting or dancing as something that actually goes across the child's life and helps him or her to grow just across their personalities. It sounds like a wonderful
right.
opportunity for children, and you've explained it in a way that I think is really eye-opening for folks who might not otherwise think about that kind of activity for their children in that kind of way.
Yeah, and I think that speaks to, like you said, I think a lot of parents are worried about kids going into any art. And I think that that's why they may look at, well, is it necessary for them to, you know, shouldn't they focus more on something that they can, you know, make a living at immediately?
Right.
But, you know, that's what I think that speaks to. It's just that fear that, you know, parents have or, you know, guardians have for their children.
Maurice, we're going to take a break in a moment, but when we come back, at the beginning of today's conversation, I introduced you as the on-again, off-again love interest of Cora from Tyler Perry's The mm-hmm. Browns. So when we come back from the break, I'd like for you to talk a little bit about what that experience was like for you.
Absolutely. Love to.
Folks, this is Pamela Brewer. You're listening to Mind Talk, and we will be right back, so don't you go away. case, you have actually worked in several films, including Mr. Deeds, where you worked with Adam Sandler, and also Bruce Almighty, where you worked alongside Jim Carrey. So these are films that are, I mean, clearly blockbusters. People know those names. They know those films. And yet, I suspect, and please correct me if I'm wrong, that your time with Tyler Perry's The Browns is what made you the most recognizable to most people. Is that a reasonable guess or no?
Yeah. I think that and the commercial work. That and the commercial work make people say, don't I know you? I know you from somewhere. I know you from, and then they'll be like, oh, you're the guy from AT. Oh, I remember that. You know, and then, of course, Reggie. I mean, playing Reggie is the most recognizable, one of the most recognizable things. Yes, you're correct in saying that. And that experience was like, oh, my goodness, unbelievable, because it was only supposed to be 3 episodes. And, the character was actually created to kind of set up Gordon with the principal at the time, with Cora. So I was supposed to go in there for 3 episodes, but the chemistry with Tamla was so great, and with David, that they just started calling me back, and next thing I know, it went from 3 episodes to like 3-4 seasons, something like that.
That's pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm.
What did you like most? Please talk about that experience.
Yeah, that was like, I mean, it took me back to working with Tyler Perry. You know, it was such a great acting experience, and it took me back to almost theater. It's like we had to, because we would do an episode a day, and we would do like 3 episodes a week. So that type of, you had to learn your lines, get them, block them. You know, we may have a whole rewrite at lunch and then come back and we shoot it and come back and do that the next day. Take your lines home, you know. And that experience, boy, that definitely sharpened my memory, sharpened my chops, you know. In that environment, you had to listen, but you had to be open and creative. And that's one thing that we were able to do. We were able to play. And I think you could see that in how well the chemistry was between, you know, myself and how I fell into the cast. And it was a great cast. I mean, everybody in there that I worked with was great. You know, I mean, David and Tamla, they're two beautiful people, you know, on and off the set. And, working with Tony Vaughn and the Colonel and, you know, the Lamont Rucker and Denise, you know, it was, and Juanita, it was great. And, you know, playing that character, you know, it's funny how he evolved, because you could see how he became, you know, the coach, you know, you saw more of the coaching stuff, and you could see how in the initial 3 episodes where, yeah, they were kind of leaning towards writing him off, because he was a little chauvinistic for a little while. But Cora broke him of that, you know. And the character just grew. He just kept growing and growing and growing and growing. And that's what I liked about being on that series, is watching a character just grow. And the writers, they just did such a good job with him, you know. And playing that kind of, people are shocked because they think that maybe I'm, you know, like that in real life. Like, some people still ask, you living with your mom? And, you know, they're like, we thought you were a little dim with it, you know, because he was a lovable guy. He was a, you know, he wasn't slow or anything like that. He was just a regular everyman, you know what I mean? But somebody could, you know, they thought that was actually me. And I'm like, no, I was acting that. And don't get me wrong, I do have some of the childlikeness that he has, but I like to keep that childlike innocence in me to be able to do what I do, You know, if you're not having fun, if you're not playing, it's hard to be an actor. Even if you're doing dramatic work, you still have to be playing, you know.
Well, I want you to talk more about that concept because, you know, there are people who turn on the television, look at a film, and think that, oh boy, that's what I want to do. That's really easy to do. I think more and more as we see perhaps musicians who one day they're on the charts and then the next day they are close to starring on something in television, I think it sort of grows that myth that acting is just an easy thing and anybody and everybody can fall into it. So to hear you talk about the work along with the play, I think is really instructive for the listeners. Talk more about that, if you would.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the thing is to make it look easy. Now, don't get me wrong. I think everyone has something in them that could maybe not make a career of it, but if you keep that childlike innocence, it's like we're told in the Bible even it's to keep that, you know, be like a child. You know, it's like that is the thing that helps, because you can see two kids and you say, you know, you're Superman, you're Batman, and they don't even think about it. They know that one can fly, one has a utility belt, one, you know, and they just start playing. And that's, as we get older, we start to lose that. And that's what I think the breakdown of learning the skill and learning the skill set, because you do need to know there are certain things, like for theater, the projection is different than, you know, when you're doing something intimate where you're like on a big movie screen. That's why you're not as big, because like you're right there. We can see everything. We can see your mind working. So you need to be able to learn how to break down a character and do stuff. And I think that when you see artists from other fields be able to, like, I feel like I've watched some artists just grow on TV and get better and better and better. And that's where they're having the opportunity to do it, because of their, you know, celebrity in the other field and because they have a following. So it is easier for them to learn on the job. But people don't realize, man, you know, Will Smith, they have coaches and they're constantly working on their stuff, you know. So that's one thing that there's technique. You don't want to see the technique, basically. You know, it's just like, you know, everybody thinks you could play a sport until you get out there and do it and realize, wow, this is hard. Wow, reading these coverages, man, you really got to know your stuff, you know. And there's something to everything that when you make it look easy, I think that's where people, that's when you're doing a good job. Because that's what makes everybody say, oh, I could do it. And I think that that's when you're like, oh, wow, you know. But it's hard to cry on a drop of a dime and have to do that after take after take after take, or night after night after night in a play, because you may have a day where it's a bad day, but if you're in a Broadway play, you still got to go to work. You know, you could be not feeling well. You know, I can remember plenty of times, you know, not feeling well and still the show had to go on. I mean, unless you're totally contagious on your deathbed, you know what I mean, you gotta go up there, and you gotta, your character doesn't, you know, he's not sick or she's not sick, you know what I mean, she's not having a bad day. You gotta still be able to play those given circumstances and entertain the people and do your job, do your craft.
You know, it's interesting, because I appreciate your describing it in that measure of detail, because, again, you know, when you turn on the television, you look at a film, it just kind of looks like, oh, well, you know, I can do that. And the reality is that the work is very hard. And it does require a great deal of training, as you say. And, you know, the idea that people, as they are in their roles, are continuing to hopefully grow, I think, again, is an important piece of awareness for people to hear about, that you don't just go to this school or do that play or do that television program and all of a sudden you know everything there is to know and then you just go on and make a whole bunch of money. It's real important that you made the comment and stressed the value and the importance of continuing to grow in your craft.
Yeah, and you have to find ways to do that while you're doing your career. And maybe still take it, if you're not, you know, fortunate enough to be on TV, still taking classes, still, you know, reading your plays, still breaking down TV and movie when you see it. You know, I don't mean in a sense where you can't enjoy the program, but you got to find ways to constantly grow. And I'm still doing that. I'm still finding. You know, I mean, I always hear one of my acting teachers tell me, try to keep it in my mind, don't act, speak. You know, and that's one of the things that you're always working on, to me. You know, and don't get me wrong, I think some people have natural gifts, you know, like Eddie Murphy or Richard Pryor, they have natural comedic gifts, talents, Kevin Hart. And that stuff is going to lend to... that comedy lends to their characters, and they're you know, they're so used to being on stage and charisma, it's like they can bring that to the characters. So that's one part of it that they have, and I think everyone has something that they can kind of, when you desire to be an actor, there is something that you will always bring to a role, you know, like be it, it's just something about you that's always there, you know. I don't know how to describe it, but you still can't let that be the, if the character you're playing isn't like that all the time, you can't force that on the character just to stay in your, you know, your safe pocket. You know, no one wants to see you doing something dramatic and you're doing it like a sitcom. You know, it doesn't lend itself to that. So you need to adapt and be able to adapt.
So you have to sort of step aside from yourself and really think about the character and what the character would do and how the character would feel. What do you do if you disagree with what the character's doing?
kind of that comes down to not taking the part. I hate to say it.
Okay.
It's like, I don't know.
Okay.
That kind of, once you say yeah to a part, you better make sure it's something you want to do, because, you know, you may have to do things that, you know, that you don't particularly, you know, care for, you know. And that's a decision that you make, and you make with your people. You know, and you don't have to do everything. It is okay to say no. I think the biggest fear when you're doing it professionally is, oh, if I turn down this opportunity, what if that was the big break? And you just got to trust and believe that your integrity is better, you know, it's better to have that than to just do everything and not really feel. It's like I got a nephew. I have people that, you know, look up to. You know what I mean? I'm in these different organizations, and, you know, I'm not saying I won't. There's things I just probably wouldn't do. I just wouldn't do. It all depends. You know, and then there's some things that, you know, I have no problem with. You know.
You know, I'm going to come back to the fact that you are an African-American actor. And as we know, there are not the broad range of opportunities, there's certainly not the number of opportunities that many believe should be available. So for you as the African-American actor, is it still important to say, to know yourself such that you either are going to say yes or no to a character, because there are just fewer opportunities?
Yeah, absolutely. 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 I still think that even though it's fewer opportunities, you still have to have that integrity about yourself, especially as an African-American actor. And it's like, it's a catch-22 because, yes, it's fewer roles, but, you know, that's why you see a lot of people developing stuff and doing stuff. And I think that that's the main problem some of our programming gets as African-Americans at times is because we don't have a lot of, you know, balanced people. That's why I think sometimes they get African-American actor can get a hard time, let's say, doing something really slapstick, you know, and it's like, well, you know, they're not portraying this, they're not doing that. Whereas for the predominantly white movies, they can have that. They can have something totally broad and off the wall, and because you turn around and then they got a movie about Kennedy, you know, or they got, you know, there's a balance, so it doesn't get, I think, put under the same microscope that we in the black community do with our television and film. And, you know, some people can be judged, like, I think unfairly because we don't have the balance, you know what I mean? It's like, we don't have the Dr. King movies coming out every year to go along with anything super silly. So I think that's a shame that we get judged like that because some people are just funny. They just want to make people laugh. You know, that's not their thing is to change the world. But, you know, that's where I think it really is a shame that we don't have enough programming that balances out everything. And not just black, it's also with, you know, you see it with the Asian community, you see it with the Latino community, you know, it's all there. It's like when it's, you know, they get put under a tighter eye, I should say, amongst their community because of the lack of, you know, balanced, I think that's the best way to say it, you know, balanced programming.
Well, it's certainly a challenge.
Women.
Oh, yeah, it's certainly a challenge to live in a country that feels so comfortable with putting pretty much everybody and anybody under a microscope and then finding that there's something that they should have done differently. I mean, certainly there are people, as you well know, probably better than I, who think that, you know, particularly if you are an African-American actor, you should only do the Martin Luther King kind of stuff. And if you're doing anything any differently, then it's a terrible thing and you're not promoting the race. And, you know, so it does put you in, it can put you in a very difficult, unhappy place.
Yeah, it can, because I think it, like I said, it unfairly, you know, judges somebody who that's just their niche, that's just their thing. That's what they want to do, and I think you should have the right to do that, you know. And within reason, with taste and all that, but that's with everything. But, I mean, you have such, you know, a broad gamut of film and television that aren't predominantly black, that's why I think it's not as, you know, no one would look at Jim Carrey and say, oh, he's a, you know, a buffoon or anything like that. They just look at him as a great, you know, physical, comedic actor. And he is, people wouldn't even, like, believe how much he knows his craft. And he makes that silly, the stuff we may call silly, look easy. But he is very, very gifted as an actor.
Interesting.
Him and Adam Sandler.
Maurice, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, I'd like to hear about Better Criminal and the role that you play in Better Criminal.
Okay, absolutely. We'll be right back.
Maurice G. Smith, you are playing the role of Mouse in Better Criminal. Is Mouse anything at all like other characters you have played?
Mouse. Yeah, he's kind of like a character. Well, no, I played a character in a friend of mine, like I said, one of my best friends, in his thesis film called A Shepherd Story, where I play a drug dealer, criminal type of dude. And I guess he has the similarities of that, because he's very charming. He's very, you know, manipulative. He's fun. He was a fun character to play, playing Mouse. And again, this is one of those things where at first Mouse was supposed to be somebody that was only there for the beginning of the movie, and I ended up making it to the end of the movie. The character, the writers kept writing stuff to bring him back, so it was another one of those experiences where opportunities just opened up, and I ended up doing way more, because he was supposed to be like killed near the beginning of the movie, but it turns out, you know, he never does. So that was a great experience.
Sounds like you might be pretty good at your craft.
Yeah, I'm trying to be. Yeah, I know. I think I'm modest. I mean, yeah, you know, you got to stay humble. But you know.
So I think what I'm gathering is that this is not a 9-to-5 job either.
Acting?
Yeah.
Oh, it can be. Like, yeah, yeah. No, I mean, it can be. You know, that's why, that's what it was like with the Meet the Brown situation. That was pretty much 9-to-5. We got there at 7, and we were usually done late at 7:30. You know, that was kind of like the TV world. You can get in the 9-to-5. The film world, sometimes it's longer, you know, because you just got to get the shot, you know. And you got to get the shot, it may be before it's dark, you know. You got to get the shot, you know. And it's like, one time we were outside doing stuff and acting like it was summertime, and it was like freezing cold outside. You know, we were eating ice cubes to make sure you didn't have, you know, the little smoke coming out of your mouth.
Maurice, there came a time when you actually made the decision to lose a fair amount of weight. And you talk a bit about that experience. Do you have an overall reaction to the impact of your weight loss on your life?
The weight loss on my, yeah, absolutely. I think it, even with fluctuating and you know, I think the heaviest I was like 312 when my dad passed. I think I got into an emotional eating thing, and I don't want to say the fear, but the idea of like diabetes and high blood pressure being able to be something you can control through weight and almost everything, you know, through diet and exercise and stuff like that, you know, it just makes you feel better. I think that's what made me do it, you know, finally say, you know, I have to do it. And when it finally hits you that it's your health, you know, because some people may never ever be skinny, but they can still do things to be healthy, you know, especially if they're dealing with complications like the diabetes or the high blood pressure or the cholesterol or, you know, stuff like that. I got a friend of mine who, he's in perfect shape, but he deals with the high blood pressure, so he has to do exercise, you know, just to keep his blood pressure down. And the more he exercises, the better his blood pressure is. So I think once you decide to do it for yourself and for your health, and you're not just doing it to win somebody's heart or, you know, look a certain way, or, you know, just because you're being, let's say, teased or something like that. Because, I mean, it comes with it. You know, having weight does bring different challenges that you do have to go to. Some people are strong about it and comfortable in their skin, and some people, it could really be a mental challenge, because they're always worried that people, which people do look at bigger people and make an assumption. Either you're sloppy, or you're mean, or you're jovial. You know, you get like instant things for any type of weight, any type of body type. But I think the, especially with kids and stuff like that, being teased and stuff, I think it's hard, you know, to do it and figure out that it's for your health. That's why I wish kids were like, I love the computer, don't get me wrong, and I love the PlayStation, I love all that stuff. But I do believe, like, kids got to get back out there in the streets, and you know, hopefully, you know, the streets got to get safer, especially in Philadelphia, like, you know, and some other parts of the city. Like, the kids got to get active again. And then they're cutting so many physical education programs in the school that it's like you got kids developing these diabetes and stuff at like 10, 11, 12, where like, you know, you normally didn't hear about it until your 40s or your 30s, unless you, you know, were born with it, type 1. So, yeah, I think you got to do it for, you got to decide. And then you bring in the other people. You know what I mean? You're living for your family. You know what I mean? You're making sure you're going to be around to enjoy this life we're given.
But the first thing, the most important thing, is to do it for yourself.
Absolutely. And have a good support base, and just, you still got to constantly, even with the support, you still got to constantly find it in yourself. And you know, I have to do it still, you know, constantly, you know, remind myself that's what it's for. It's not just to get roles or, you know, have more opportunities as an actor or whatever. It's really to try to be here, you know, to see my nephew graduate and stuff like that.
Did you find that as your weight changed, you were offered different roles, or did that have no impact? Did the weight change have no impact?
It's funny. It did have an impact. It's funny. It's like I remember when I first dropped a lot of the weight, you know, some of the agents and managers that I was dealing with at the time was finding it was hard to get people to see me in another light. However, I'll say this, the commercial, I had one, there was a commercial agency that like always brought me in. I was booking a lot with them, and they said, you know, we never saw you as a big guy. We never, you know, even brought you in for stuff where it was just like the overweight guy. You know, it's like, we're glad you did it for your health, but we never, you know, I was going in for dads, I was going in for boyfriends, I was going in for, you know, pretty good stuff. So, yeah, it did have an impact, some good, some bad, because, you know, to lose that weight and then feel like, oh, wow, now I got to rebrand myself, you know, you kind of feel like, well, dang. You know, why did I do it? And that's where it goes back to. You did it because of health. So if people got to re-see you now, and it's funny because even as a big guy, as an actor, I never really thought of myself that way. You know what I mean? Because it's like I was in both worlds as a youth. So I never really saw, unless I saw it, you know, on TV. I was like, oh, man, I was pretty big. You know, but I didn't, like, even as Reggie, I never thought, even with the jokes about his weight, I still thought he was just a cool dude. You know, in my mind, I was like, I'm all right, you know, so I think that helped. And don't get me wrong, there was off and on, there were times when you would, I did grow up and have some issues with it, but I still always saw myself in a certain light. It's weird. I still always saw myself in a certain light that it fell right into place, whether I'm big or small.
Speaking
you know,
of
doing... I can tell when I'm clothes don't fit, though.
Yeah, that you can tell, right? Speaking of doing things for you, are there things in your future that you would like to do just for Maurice?
One dream I've always had is this beach house. So hopefully that one day.
Okay.
Because I'm really like a homebody kind of guy a little bit. It's like I spent my years of going out and being a frat boy and all that. I'm still involved in stuff, but I still just want a beautiful, you know, a nice home, you know, and a family unit, you know, and all that type of stuff. Stuff that I've put off, that I'm no longer going to put off, because I did put off for years getting a family, because it's hard to take someone on this ride as an actor. But that's the thing that I kind of just, you know, want in the future, and then still affects people with be it through my community service or through the acting, you know. And I eventually would love to direct as well. I always wanted to do that. I wanted to be like a Sidney Poitier type of dude, or Denzel's even directed. A lot of people have directed, and I want to be able to do that as well. Like Spike Lee was one of my biggest people that affected me when I was growing up. I must have seen School Days, like, I cut class to see it, and then I saw it again, and then I took my cousin to see it. It was like, I was so into that. I've always wanted to be the actor, director, eventually, like a Clint Eastwood and stuff like that. So that's really what I like.
For the,
and it doesn't have to be a big home, just a nice home.
And at the beach, right?
Near some water.
Okay. It's good to be flexible.
Yeah.
For those listening who might consider, particularly for the parents who are listening, whose children, regardless of their age, announce that they want to go into acting or entertaining or somehow being in front of the camera, do you have any guidance to share with the parents?
Well, I think for the parents, I think it's don't project your fears on their career choice. Find a way to be supportive and concerned, and, you know, be that reality person in their lives. But also don't just project your fears, because the same fears you have, you'll have for them, whether they were going to be a lawyer, which is competitive, or a banker, or just in these days, in these economic times, just any job, you know. So I think that being supportive helps, and staying in their corner and cheering them on. And you know, for the people that are deciding to do this, you gotta, like, I believe in God. I have a strong, you know, spiritual base. Have some sort of, you gotta have faith and believe in something while you believe in yourself to get your dreams, because it is a lofty pursuit to try to do entertainment or sports, you know. But it's funny, because I think parents don't realize it's like only, what, 3% of people will make it into the league. But they support that without a problem. And that could end in high school with a knee injury, you know.
Absolutely.
But it doesn't have the same fears, I think. Because I think also, too, we've seen it. That's how, you know, people don't realize you can make a living as an actor doing industrials. You know, for an industrial, is just like training videos. You know, in Pennsylvania, in Philly, where I was from, when I first started, I was doing a lot of stuff that was, you know, somebody's training video, or doing stuff for corporate world. You know, people don't understand, you can make a living doing, it doesn't all have to be in, you know, the big screen or the big markets. Some people make a living right in smaller markets, and they're happy.
The idea of really looking at all the options in the career field of your interest is important. And of course, guiding parents not to project their fears onto their children's dreams, I think, is such a powerful piece of wisdom. Maurice G. Smith, thank you so much for joining us today on this edition of Mind Talk. It really has been a treat for me just to spend this time with you.
Oh, I appreciate it, too. It was a pleasure. And you know, I hope that it's impactful to people, and what you're doing is a good thing. It's a very good thing, and it helps people out. And these type of discussions, I believe, does open people's eyes up to pursue their dreams or learn about a person or get to know people. This was a pleasure. I truly appreciate it.
All right. Well, thank you, and feel free to come back and join us anytime.
Oh, you let me know.
Okay. Folks, thank you for joining us today on this edition of Mind Talk. Mind Talk is brought to you daily as an educational public service and is available on demand by going to myndtalk.org. Mind Talk is produced by Jim Brown and 26x2 Communications. And I want you to remember that if it's unacceptable, that's what it is. Unacceptable. And by the way, if you want to be in touch with me, just send me an email at Pamela, P-A-M-E-L-A, at mindtalk.org. Thanks for listening. Take care.